Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
I have been predicting since December of 2024 that AI, along with immigration reform, would cause the jobs numbers to crater later in 2025. Artificial intelligence boosts productivity, and that means employers can produce more with less workers. But most importantly, closing the borders equates to, instead of having millions of new people in this country each year available and looking for work, we have a net outflow of immigration. In fact, overall labor force growth is just 0.5%. That's half of the input to GDP. Productivity plus labor force growth. Labor force growth is one half of 1%. The future for U.S. labor force growth looks even more bleak than the current half a percent. The fecundity rate was around a record low of 1.6 trillion per each woman in 2024, according to the Centers for Disease Control. This trend has been declining, the birth rates, the fecundity rate, for two decades, falling below the replacement level of 2.1 needed to sustain population. We need immigration to grow the economy robustly. Of course, we need good immigration. We should vet those who seek to enter this nation and ensure they embrace our freedom-loving ethos, our Christian-like love of neighbor, if I may be so bold to say. We need good, hardworking, honest, educated, freedom-loving people in this country. That is the kind of immigration that we need. But the result is that we have now, with no immigration at all, is an anemic economy for sure, but with even weaker jobs data. Here's some examples of how weak the labor market has become. The prediction has become a reality. The Jobs Opening and Labor Turnover Report, otherwise affectionately known as JOLTS, showed there around 7.18 million listings for jobs opening in July, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. This is one of the lowest readings on job opening levels since the pandemic caused the economy to crash. Since there is now increased pressure on the BLS to produce robust non-farm payroll report numbers, the ADP employment report must become even more important. And the reading for August was an anemic 54,000 net new jobs created, according to ADP. And that's down sharply from the 104,000 created in July. Then we have other data at the BLS from the August non-farm payroll report. There were only 22,000 jobs created there, despite all the pressure to produce great numbers. The last 2 months, jobs were revised lower by 21,000. But June was revised to a negative 13,000 jobs created. Negative. We had a negative month in June. The last 3 months averaged just 29,000 jobs. The headline unemployment rate ticked up to 4.3%. More importantly, the U6 unemployment rate, which includes those discouraged workers and marginally attached to the workforce, those that wish to be working full-time but working part-time, that rose to 8.1%, which is the highest level since October of 2021. And the average work week was at 34.3 hours, which is near the lowest point since 2010. The ISM manufacturing, by the way, not only do we have official government data that's now weakening, we have private sector data. It's like the ADP and we have the ISM. The ISM manufacturing survey saw that the unemployment subcomponent came in far below the expansion contraction line of 50 with a reading of 43.8. Meanwhile, the ISM services sector survey had employment coming in at 46.5. So both the manufacturing and services sectors of the economy from this ISM surveys indicate that the labor market is currently contracting. We're losing jobs. And finally, we have the massive benchmark revisions from the Labor Department that was released this week. These revisions use tax data instead of data from surveys. So they're the most accurate we'll ever get from the government. The tax data shows that there was an incredible 911 less jobs than originally reported, less jobs created than originally reported during the period of April 2024 to March of 25. This is the worst ever payroll revision in the 26 years of the series, of the revision series. Now, Mr. Powell, along with the rest of his merry band of money printers at the Fed, are labor market economists. They are much more concerned about the state of the jobs market than they do, or, you know, than they're concerned about inflation. And at face value, the labor market, from all the data I just went through, screams that we are in a recession right now. It says, according to the labor market data, that we are in a recession right now. And that is all, or the predominant factor of what the labor-obsessed Federal Open Market Committee fears the most and sees the clearest. But the weak labor data is mostly, and I'm going to hammer this point home in this podcast, the weak labor market data is, yeah, it's a little bit about a weak economy for sure, but it's mostly the result of a lack of labor supply due to crashing immigration rates. Therefore, the weakness in the labor market and economy cannot easily be fixed by a few rate cuts. After all, lowering the overnight interbank lending rate will not increase the supply of labor. What we need to do foremost is boost birth rates and increase the amount of healthy immigration. And both of those take time, a lot of time. Making babies right now is not going to increase the labor force anytime soon. And it doesn't look like the border is going to be, the floodgates aren't going to be opened. And that's a good thing, but good immigration is kind of on ice. The coming series of rate cuts must occur without inflation rates increasing and without the long end of the yield curve rising. If that is indeed the case, if we can get rate cuts without inflation rates increasing and without the long end getting out of control, we can avoid a recession and it would be a very strong tailwind for equities. However, if these rate cuts that are coming cause long-term rates to rise and CPI to increase, then the rate cuts could and should lead to a debacle in the stock market. As clearly stated, the weak employment data is a function of lack of labor supply, not so much a lack of labor demand. Both are true to a certain degree, but the former is the more salient issue. In other words, the prevailing scenario at this moment is that even though economic growth is anemic due to tariffs and inflation and a reduced labor force, it is the lack of labor supply that is making the non-farm payroll report excessively weak, rather than it being a symptom of an economy that is contracting. It's not the economy falling off a cliff. Credit spreads are not blowing out. Financial conditions are not tightening rapidly. In fact, the opposite is the case, at least for now. Now, as you are all well aware, those of you who know me best, I am very far from being a Pollyanna. But if you look at the ISMs and the headline ISMs, not the labor component, the headline Institute of Supply Management surveys of businesses, the leading economic indicators, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, all those surveys clearly show the overall economy is weak, but not in a recession. Please note, I said the overall economy is not in a recession. Not every part of it. It is, however, it's been a protracted recession for the bottom four quintiles. It's only the top 20% of Americans that are enjoying an asset bubble boom that is offsetting the malaise extent in the bottom 80%. Hence, the most important takeaway here in this podcast is that the Fed will now be cutting interest rates rather aggressively starting on September 17th, but this acute rate cutting cycle will be one that is more than necessary given the true condition of overall economic activity. The result should be an exacerbation of inflation rates, which will pour fuel on the existing and raging asset bubble pyre. So the key question is, will those higher inflation rates cause the long end of the bond market to become unglued? And that'll mean that I have to change the current strategy. But if it doesn't, what's going to occur is we're going to have the entire over-leveraged financial system become even more fragile and dangerous as we expand these bubbles. Since the next rate cutting cycle is now imminent, it required action on the part of the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle portfolio. We are exiting the high-yielding money market allocation before those rates begin to recede. We are going a bit more out on the yield curve to capture a more stable yield and potential principal appreciation. We are also increasing our allocation to inflation hedges that are already inclusive of gold and platinum and energy-producing land, but we added oil and natural gas to the companies to the mix, which offer inflation protection and provide a nice dividend as well, which is especially beneficial during rate cutting cycles. Again, the caveat here, how high does inflation go? Is it just inflation that stays on Wall Street? Does inflation in the middle class get out of control even further? Does it cause yields to rise? That's what I'm myopically focused on. But either way, the buy and hold investment strategy is a disaster during conditions where the swings between inflation and deflation are so severe. The flexibility provided by our strategy is our big advantage.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you are not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.